Scott, I will be happy to mention you've been in jail. Okay, so we have a quorum, even though it looks like we're missing a member or two, so I will go ahead and call this meeting to order. Ready for the roll call? Yeah.
Bennett.
Here.
Graham.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Ferguson.
Here.
Kilgore. Rappaport.
Here.
Rollins Gay. Sullivan.
Here.
And I believe Rollins Gay is present. So we should have her joining us in a minute. Most of the members have been doing a jail tour, so most everybody's running a couple minutes late. We need to have this agenda approved or modified. Is there a motion on the agenda?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve from Ferguson, second from Driscoll.
Can I have an addition to the agenda or clarification?
Speak.
I just want some clarity on this. I had submitted and circulated a paper on cities where jail construction projects were reversed, making use of alternatives to incarceration, and I was told it would be discussed. So I just want some clarity as to where that will be discussed and if it will be on the agenda.
Absolutely. I believe you're talking about what everybody got in the packet, right?
That's correct.
And item 8. The discussion will be a great time to incorporate that into our meeting tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the motion?
I've got an item that might be appropriate. I created a little evaluation sheet for us to mark our own comments on with respect to two questions for each of the programs under discussion. To what extent does the program reduce incarceration, and to what extent is the program an appropriate example for us to consider further? I don't know if this would be something that other people would like to look at and use while we talk through these things, but I've printed 10 of them and happy to hand them out if people are interested.
Great. Sounds useful. Does anybody want one of those? Feel free to just pass them out to everybody. Is there any other discussion on the motion? All in favor of approving the agenda, say aye. All opposed, say aye. The agenda passes. Next is public participation. There is time to get another slip in. We have 3 people speaking. If you want to speak but haven't filled out a form, fill one that should be over at the corner and bring it up. First, we have Patsy Petrie tonight.
This for me is just gratis.
Good afternoon to everybody. I'm Patsy Petrie. I'm one of the 3 county board members that represent.
Great, thank you.
6. Isn't it on?
Okay, again, I'm Patsy Petrie. I'm one of the 3 members who represents District 6 on the county board. And the reason for coming before you, besides thanking you all again for being willing to serve on this very important task force, is to mention that I did attend the town hall meeting that was held on the 11th of May at the Urbana City Council. chambers on the jail issue. And there are a couple of very important things that came out of that town hall that I hope to bring to your attention, and maybe the chair of this task force can facilitate getting the materials for to you all so that you can have a chance to first view the DVD of the town hall. It was extremely informative. I didn't notice any of you there attending the town hall. You might have been home watching it on UPTV because it was showing live. But if you didn't have that chance because it was a Friday evening, there is a DVD available, and so you could watch it at your home. And it's a couple of hours, so I'll let you know there is a bit of a time framework. During that town hall, some of the principal speakers are the folks from Monroe County in Indiana. And that is where the University of Indiana is in Bloomington. And they have been quite successful in what they have been able to accomplish in relationship to supportive programs for community justice and the jail situation in that county. Now, they do function under different laws than we do here in the state of Illinois, so there is that caveat. However, I did bring an example of the brochure that they shared with us, and that can be found on their website, and you can look at it yourselves or print it out yourselves. And the, oh, do you have it? Oh, great. Oh, good. Well, then you can see that they covered various programs under major headings, and these are all quite interesting, and I am hoping that the task force will have a chance to study those and pick from those the ones that you think might work well within our county and within your charge for some evaluation, and maybe more will come up as you look at other counties, but I do encourage that. The last piece of information, and I don't know, maybe you've already received it, Chris Evans, who is part of the People for Peace and Justice within the county, put together an extremely helpful history of the quarter cent, and that's the monies that would be used for any work on the jail. And it's good to understand the background of how that came up, to read the actual referendum of it, the resolutions from the county board, and that would just give you some historic background. So if you haven't already received that, I can share it with the chair, and the chair in turn can share it with all of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Petrie. Next, we have the Reverend Dr. Evelyn Bianu.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Reverend Dr. Evelyn B. Underwood, and I'm from the New Free Will Baptist Church, associate minister here in Champaign. 601, do we need to give our address? 601 East Grove Street in Champaign. I have a conference call later this evening, and it is unfortunate for me that I'm going to have to leave. However, I understand that this is your first meeting. Am I correct in this?
The second meeting.
Oh, this is the second meeting. Anyway, this is the first one that I know about. And I felt that it is important that I be here tonight. And I am here to encourage you in your work and give you my blessings. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Evelyn. Next, we have Pius Weibel.
Pius Weibel, I'm glad I can speak from here. I live at 709 West Green Street, Champaign. And I just want to announce that the Champaign County Drug Corps is having a graduation ceremony, and you are all invited. It's a public ceremony. It's on Monday, the 18th of June. It starts at 2:15. It's at the Urbana Civic Center, and there's a small reception that follows. So I'd encourage all of you to attend.
Can you just give us the details again, please?
Date? Monday, the 18th of June. 18th. At 2:15. At the Urbana Civic Center. All right?
Thank you.
Great. Is there any more public participation? Okay. Public participation is closed. The next item we have on the agenda is approval of the last meeting's minutes, which you will find in your agenda right after the purple pages. Does anybody have any corrections for the minutes? Would somebody like to motion approval of the minutes? Approval motion by Bennett, seconded by Sullivan. Is there any discussion on the minutes? No discussion on the minutes. All in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say aye. Motion passes. That brings us to the meat of our agenda, the presentations. We have six programs having to do with the county jail. Sheriff, we have multiple presenters, and I will say go ahead.
We have Nancy Griffin, who's in charge of all of our programs, everything from library to trustees, discipline, so she can talk about all that. We also have Sue Swain, our head nurse, RN, and then we have Harmony Gorley, who's in charge of our mental health. So any way you want to go, I'm thinking the ladies think about 10 to 20 minutes to tell you what they do and then answer any questions at all you might have, if that's okay with you. And Mr. Chair, then we'll stick around if you want us to the command, or we'll leave, whatever. You just tell us what you want us to do.
Well, let's do the presentations, and then if people have questions, and I think people do because this is an inquisitive bunch, then we can do those while everybody's still here, and then we'll get you guys out of here as soon as we can. James?
Just before we start the presentation, I just want to raise the point in terms of this forum, and if at some point we're going to have a discussion of what our process is going to be to actually evaluate these programs and so forth, and you know how we can discern which ones are alternatives to incarceration and might merit further investigation and so forth. So I think we need to have a process by which we decide that, and we need to discuss that at some point. I don't know if you have that in your plans here.
Certainly something that can be discussed under Section 8, talking about our next steps.
Am I ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Nancy Griffin. I'm the program coordinator at the Champaign County Jail. There's a number of programs that we have at the jail. I filled out the questionnaire that you presented to me. The point I've got to make is these are volunteer programs. They're provided to the jail at no cost. There are program materials that are also provided to the jail through the respective programs that are available. And it's an important part of the jail. I've been in charge of programs or coordinating the programs at the jail since 1989. There are programs that have come. There are programs that go. Program development is something that I'm always in the process of in. As I get new volunteers in, we keep the inmates busy. The programs are important. Some things are very valuable, like GED, Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, even some of the more I don't really want to call them frivolous, but they're really self-investment programs, such as poetry. I'm in the process of coordinating with a Pilates instructor. So program development is something that we're always in the process of in, and it's an important aspect of the jail. Any questions?
I have a question. Do you know if any of these, is there any evidence that any of the programs that you coordinate actually reduce incarceration?
Yes. Do I have actual statistics to show you? It's kind of hard to show the negative. When somebody is not returning to the jail, it's kind of hard to demonstrate that. But when we do have graduates in the GED program, I think that would be considered a success.
Do you know of any programs that have been rigorously evaluated that would randomly assign people to participate or not participate and then follow the incarceration of those people over time?
Have we done a study to demonstrate that?
Not necessarily you, but I'm wondering if anybody's aware of these kinds of studies with respect to the kinds of programs that we're discussing today. Is there any evidence, is my question, that these programs reduce incarceration or are effective alternatives to incarceration?
I think that quite a few studies have been done on Alcoholics Anonymous that would demonstrate a reduction in recidivism. I think that Narcotics Anonymous would be another program that would demonstrate that.
In terms of getting people who are in the pipeline out of the county jail on some alternative to incarceration, there's not really evidence to that effect. Is that our common understanding?
I think it depends on which programs you're talking about.
That's what I'm asking. I'm asking for any information about any of these programs. That,
for example, Mental Health Court has data and studies. Certainly, yeah, I mean...
But that's not one of the programs, though. That's in
it's
the
one
next
of the,
set.
Right,
yeah, okay.
Right. So you're talking about these specifically.
Yeah, I'm talking about the VA Alcoholics Anonymous Church and Bible Study Friday Prayer.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Sure.
I have three questions.
Oh, hold on one second, lady.
Yeah, not to interrupt, and we'll answer whatever you want to. We're here to tell you about programs in the jail. These are not necessarily what you guys are charged with. I thought that you folks want an explanation of what goes on in the jail. Most of what we're going to talk about now will not take people out of the system or reduce it, so I don't want to leave anybody with the impression that we think some of these things are for that. It encourages good behavior, but I just want to make that clear. That's not what we're here about.
Thanks for that clarification. I appreciate that.
Mr. Driscoll.
The GED program seems to be a program that has a positive result, and in fact, I would also say that the their services offered within their time spent within the jail on exiting from the jail, that these are
okay. Anybody? When do you have questions on the programs?
Just about the GED, because I do see it within our charge, looking at integrating the system so that sometimes we can dissipate pressures on the jail. And so I have several questions related to that. Just in terms of the GED, is there continuity? They start the program at the jail, but they're released. Is there that continuity?
Yes. Our GED teacher does make referrals. If somebody is in the jail, they're in the GED program, and they're preparing to be released from jail, she gives them a good solid referral so that when they go to Parkland College, they know who to contact, where they're supposed supposed to go, and their records are then transferred over as well.
But is that ever a condition, for example, if they're, once they're sentenced, the condition of probation that they get that degree, for example?
It's been a condition for people that are sentenced to the jail that they work towards succeeding with their GED.
Okay. And then I saw that this is not offered for women?
We don't have a formal GED class in the jail for women. Education funding is often based on numbers, and because we don't have enough women for a formal GED class, we do provide tutoring through Project READ. And I believe we've had 5 women actually participate with a tutor, and they are working towards their GED.
Okay. Mr. Kilgore, can I remind everybody, please speak into your microphones so the room can hear and so everything's being properly recorded. Mr. Kilgore?
Just in terms of GED, can anyone actually take the GED exam while they're in the jail, and what kind of numbers do you have on that?
They cannot take the GED test in the jail. They have to be, it's got to be a public site. And because we don't allow people to come in from the outside to take the GED testing, the test isn't offered at the jail.
Any other questions, Professor Rappaport?
So I'm just trying to figure out, I probably can get it from these reports, but what's your sense of the percentage of individuals at any given time in the jail who are participating in these programs?
It depends on what the program is. Some program participation is as low as 5 or 10%. For example, actually right now, I have no women that are involved in the tutoring program through Project READ. A high turnout for library runs between 60 to 80%, and that stays fairly constant. So it really depends on what the program is. Churches, another program that's heavily attended. To a lesser extent, the Alcoholics Anonymous, the attendance is a smaller percentage, and a smaller percentage for Narcotics Anonymous.
So just to make sure that I understand this set of programs, I think that what these are programs that have to do with quality of life for someone while they're incarcerated.
And hopefully quality of life for when they leave. These are all programs that are available in the community.
And they're voluntary.
And they're voluntary.
So that is, the inmates can take them if they wish to.
They're non-mandated, that's correct.
Right. And you're limited by what you offer. What you're offering is limited by which groups in the community come in and offer such voluntary programs. So it's voluntary on both sides, is
right.
What I'm saying.
It's non-mandated on the inmate side. It's a volunteer program for people that, in the community to come in, provide or facilitate the group for, let's say, AA. They also provide the program materials.
So if people from the community want to do something, a different program, what the process would involve, what, coming to see you, or some formal process that they go through? Or?
There's a formal process to become a volunteer. I have many volunteers that conduct the AA meetings, and they also come as library volunteers. I've got volunteers that are library volunteers that have actually developed other programs because it's something that they're interested in.
I'm just trying to get a sense of, okay, if somebody here in this audience thinks, you know, what we really need at the jail is I don't know what, but maybe they have ideas.
Anger management.
They would come talk to you about it?
Yes.
Is that the process? And then,
yes.
Then there'd be steps. Does this have to be approved beyond you, or how does this work exactly?
If there's somebody that, let's say, wants to be an AA volunteer, they would be referred by the local volunteers, and they would contact me. We would set up a meeting. They would come in to get cleared. They would have to be fingerprinted and photographed, and we run a background check on them. And once they're cleared, and it happens pretty quickly, then they actually, we set up a day and time that we expect for them to start coming in and working as a volunteer. We also want to make sure that they're with somebody that has done this for quite some time, so that it's not somebody that's just coming in blind to a meeting that inside of a jail and they've never done this before. So it's a number of things.
Sure.
Yeah, if I might, Professor, I think you were talking about programs and Nancy was talking about individual volunteers, if I understood that conversation right. If somebody has an idea for a new program, there's two ways it can come into effect. You can start with Nancy and it works its way up, or you can start with myself or one of these gentlemen, and then we talk to Nancy and it work its way down. So, yes, there is an approval process. Somebody just couldn't walk in and say, well, I want to teach painting today, if that answers your question better.
Okay.
Great. Are there any other questions right now? Well, we brought what looks like half the sheriff's department here to talk about. We've talked previously. Many of you have a theoretical framework, and you know what programs are out there, but you wanted to know what the county was doing. So, Nancy, why don't we go through these one by one and make sure the committee knows what you guys are doing, and talk a little bit about these, and not everybody in the audience will have seen these memos that you prepared for us, and talk a little bit about your specific program so everybody's clear what you guys are doing in the jail.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. The first program that I have in my packet is the VA program. That's provided by the Veterans Administration Program in Danville. Veterans only are eligible for participation, and we make referrals regularly to the VA staff. So.
Okay. Did anybody have any follow-up on the VA program? We talked a little bit about that at the jail tonight. Okay.
The next item I've got is Alcoholics Anonymous. We have weekly meetings for the men and the women. It's a non-mandated program. Anybody interested in attending can attend. The local AA chapter provides volunteers. They also donate a number of literature. They provide not just the literature. They also have a newspaper. It's called The Grapevine. And they also donate AA Big Books and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. So this is whenever I need a new stack of supplies, I notify the corrections chair and they make sure that we get them. Sometimes I'll have an inmate in my office and they're concerned about what they should do with their drinking. They don't know if they really want to go to AA. If I need an individual to come in to talk to that person, we set up individual appointments. Sometimes I just give them an AA big book and let them decide for themselves if this really applies to them. So it's a number of ways that they may be referred to the program. Any questions on the Alcoholics Anonymous program?
And Nancy, you were saying earlier you think this is a program that does reduce future incidents of incarceration?
Absolutely. Before I worked at the jail, I was a substance abuse counselor for 10 years at Prairie Center. And I do know from my experience there that people that do quit drinking, that's the intervention they need to change what's ever happening in their life. So what is it? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting the same results. Well, this is our intervention for the jail.
May I ask a question?
Absolutely, sure. Professor.
So I would guess that it wouldn't be difficult, and maybe they do it, or does Alcoholics Anonymous keep some sort of record of how many people, when they are released from jail, go to a community AA group? That would be one easy index to see if there's some.
I think that would be really interesting, and I'd be really happy to get a hold of our corrections chairperson to see if he has any statistics. He keeps volumes of records. I'll have to see if that's one of the things that he does keep. I'd be happy to check with him. But I also think we need to remember that Anonymous is part of the name, and they are protective with that. However, when they do come to volunteer at the jail, they're happy to give me their last name for the background. So that's something that they have to do. I don't have the Narcotics Anonymous page on me, but I can tell you that Narcotics Anonymous does have a meeting for the men once per week, a meeting for the women once per week. They also do individual things similar, individual sessions similar to what our AA people provide. And they also provide Narcotics Anonymous big books. That is something that's, it's literature available to the population. So if they don't have the money for that themselves, it's something that's provided. Any questions on Narcotics Anonymous? GED is available to the men. The providers are Parkland College and Adult Ed. They provide 12 hours of education per week for 16.6 weeks for the semester. Project READ also provides tutoring to supplement and enrich the GED program. We've got a U of I professor that comes once a week and has anywhere, he's got a core group of 5 to 8 people that he works with, particularly with math. Project READ also is a provider for tutoring for the women at the downtown jail, and the tutors will come in once a week or as much as they can for the women that attend. If we've got a woman student that is in school and is working through a lot of work, they actually will come in more often. So that's Project READ and GED, if anybody's got any questions.
We have any questions on the GED program? Okay.
Healthcare facilitation is provided by a medical doctor and several of the ministers from the Vineyard Church. They provide they don't supplement or take place of the medical staff that we actually have at the jail, but this is medical information for the inmate population so that they know how to take care of themselves in terms of diet, regular health care, exercise, any number of things. They have a program for the men at the satellite jail. They also have a program for the women at the downtown jail. Inmate library is provided to us through Books to Prisoners. They provide the volunteer librarians as well as the raw materials. Library at the downtown jail is on Monday evening. At the satellite jail, it's on Friday morning. And we have volunteers every day or coming in for the programs. Actually, we got volunteers coming into the jail every day, throughout the day. But library is held once a week, and they also do things like clean up the library, make sure that our books are new and fresh, they also provide orders. If somebody's interested in a particular title or a particular author, they will actually go in and try to find that book for the person. Friday prayer is provided to the inmate population through the Central Illinois Mosque. The imams come in on Friday evenings, and they provide Muslim literature as well as Qurans, prayer rugs, and if there is somebody that requests individual appointments, they will provide that as well. The jail's chaplain is Jesus Is Away Prison Ministry. They provide church and Bible study services for the men and women at the satellite and downtown jail. They provide Bible studies and Bibles to the men and women. If we have somebody with special needs that, let's say, needs a large print Bible, they will provide that as well as individual services for men or women that request individual services. Any questions on church or Bible study? Yes.
I didn't understand in the report the numbers, the total number of participants.
For the year.
For, like, am I reading this correctly? 6,700 men?
That's every week, that's how many men throughout the year will attend. That number will turn over.
Okay. So you're...
Okay.
That's... In a given week, there are...
52 men that will attend church.
Oh, I see. And it's...
Between the downtown...
times 50, whatever that is.
Right. Between the downtown jail and two church...
talking about church attendance.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. I just didn't understand the number.
Okay.
Okay. Do we have any other questions from the task force on these specific programs? While we have these representatives from the Sheriff's Department here, one of the things that we're talking about, and it's necessarily facilities heavy, is talking about how the current facilities are affecting the programming and operations. So I guess I'll just open it up. If any of the six of you want to talk about your current programming, any challenges that you might have currently, this committee is going to be looking at, after looking at things we're doing, looking at things we might do. So this, I assume this is the only time that we'll have to talk, dialogue with you guys on that. So if you guys wanted to say your piece on that, that's probably good right now too.
I think probably our two, well, in terms of just the facilities, you've seen it, so the satellite, you mentioned programs. I mean, we have one room plus a library. We have one small room plus a library at downtown. We have that, which you haven't seen. We have one room that we use for everything from classroom to library to church to our briefings at the satellite. So the space limitation right there is somewhat of a problem for us to get over. The other problem then when it comes to actual delivery of services, and that's why I asked these two folks, our medical staff and our mental health staff, I don't know how much detail. I mean, we could probably talk for hours, but in terms of just medical, I mean, we really need basically mini hospital rooms, but they can probably talk about it. And then in terms of counseling, I mean, our idea of a private area is perhaps we can get a cell with nobody else around or a little cubby hole where Harmony can talk to people. We're very limited in terms of just the available space for those things, and I'm not sure if that's what you meant, Chair Richards.
Absolutely. I may have said programming. I misspoke. More in general, I meant operations. And I think talking about the medical and mental health operations, especially at the downtown facility that we're talking about what we're going to do with, would be very enlightening for the committee.
Well, probably then I would defer. They can, three of us will answer any question that you guys come up with. At least we hope we will. But those guys can talk about the specifics because they deal with it every day.
From here, up there.
There's fine. Just be sure to use your microphone.
I'm Harmony. I'm the mental health administrator. Just kind of briefly to talk about day-to-day what I would do. It's myself, and we have two part-timers that work. We come in the day, and any new intake, so inmates that were just arrested between the time that the last counselor left, we review all of them, would have a mental health evaluation screening assessment done from an officer. We review all of those to determine who needs to be seen, any psychiatric history, alcohol, drug use, or just presenting as depressed, anxious. Those are the people that we would see. They would go to court the next day. Sometimes that can stir up emotions, and they would need some support. So we see everyone as they come in. Again, those first couple days that they're arrested is the highest risk time for suicide. So we spend a lot of time in the booking. And then once they go to court, if the judge, if they have to stay, we're involved with housing some inmates if they need any special housing. So we have one pod that it's a much smaller pod that we put our more acute medical or mental health inmates. So maybe they have some type of psychosis. They're not violent. They can be around other people, but they might have some type of delusion or psychosis, maybe even mentally retarded, that we try to protect them as much as we can. And then a larger pod that is a GP pod, but still some of our guys that might be vulnerable in some other way. So we determine housing for some of them. And again, it's just crisis intervention at the jail. That's all that we have time for. So it's suicide and homicide risk assessments. Meeting with guys if they are presenting with some mental illness, which many do, but to the point where they can't function in our jail, then we have a psychiatrist, one on call 24/7 and one that comes in twice a month. And to determine we're the gatekeepers of who sees the psychiatrist. And if we are going to start medications with any inmate, then there's discussions about linkage and how can you continue these meds on the outside for the continuity of care. So we're working with those inmates. And then there's staff referrals. So maybe they see something abnormal going on with some inmate, so they would write a referral to us. We would assess that inmate, that situation. Inmates are also welcome to send referrals if they wish to be seen, so we would meet with them. We might have some staff referrals have to share bad news with an inmate, maybe a family member passed away, or even they're coming back from court, they were just sentenced to 30 years, and that's that brief counseling, assess their suicidality. If they're not suicidal, just ensuring that it's safe for them to go back to the housing that they were in before. So on a day-to-day, that's essentially what we do. I work very closely with Sue, the medical staff, sharing information with Nancy, and then again with anyone in corrections who also have contact with the inmates just to determine the treatment plan of how we can care for the inmates so that they don't get any worse while they're here.
Mr. Kilgore, you have questions?
Yeah. I'm wondering if you have any kind of figures on the sorts of charges that people have with mental health issues. I mean, it's a particular concern because, we know more and more people with mental health problems are ending up in jail, and yet jail is not good for their mental health. So are we finding that the vast majority of these people have committed very serious crimes, and there is no other alternative than to keep them there, and they must be housed there for years, or would you say that it's a minority, or do we have any information on that?
I guess it would be how you define mental illness, major mental illness and not a personality disorder, taking out substance use. I don't know that it's more often than not a violent crime. It is usually the misdemeanors, substance-related, criminal trespass. For a lot of the guys, they struggle with psychosis. But if we add in the personality disorders, the antisocial, the borderline inmate, and then all the addiction, that's close to 80% of our inmates.
So would it be true that if there was more effective preventive mental health facilities on the streets, that a lot of these people would never end up being incarcerated in the first place? I mean, they wouldn't, because they would be in a much less
vulnerable position. They could be diverted. Yes.
Any other questions on mental health operations for Harmony, from anybody? Yeah. Mr. Rappaport?
I can't look at you and talk to you.
Please choose the microphone.
Let's go around the other side of your desk. Or use this one. Clever guy.
I'm wondering, from your point of view, in terms of doing your job, if you have limited resources, would you rather have more people or more space? I know that it's not, you'd like everything, but just, because the numbers that you just said, yourself and two part-time people, and a psychiatrist on call. So I'm just thinking about how do you deal with things like, you know, well, I won't go into what I'm thinking, but I'm sure you can imagine your own. I'm just wondering what your need for resources actually is, as opposed to what other people think it should
be. Yes, I don't know that I could separate them. Certainly we need better use of space, for especially with the downtown. You see the visual access. A lot of the time I'll house my inmates that psychiatrically, for whatever reason, they have to be segregated. It's not safe for them or someone else for them to be housed with other people. And if they're behind two doors, and if there's, again, the number one risk of suicide is segregated housing, so they're housed alone. And if they do hurt themselves, there might be two doors that an officer would have to go through, so there's not that immediate attention that they could get. And we just don't have enough of the open cells that are in booking. So better use of space is one, but also more staff. I mean, I don't know that I could separate what need is more.
I don't have much of a feel for how understaffed you feel, if you do feel understaffed.
Oh, yes.
I just don't sort of like, in order to do a really good job, how many people would you actually need?
Well, I think just in the last couple of years, we had three full-timers, and I think, and a part-timer, and now it's just one full-timer, and we haven't lost any inmates. So certainly more staff.
I get the idea. Thank
yeah.
you.
Do we have any other questions on the mental health operations at the county correction system? Sheriff, do you want to add something?
Yeah, if I can say something, Harmony, feel free to disagree with me. You asked a question about is it serious offenders? I don't think the outside world understands what we do. Correctional officers and the people sitting at these tables, we do more to get people out probably than a lot of defense attorneys do. If we have somebody in on minor charges, trespassing, we don't want to keep them, especially if they've got mental health problems where they can function. We'd much rather have them out in the community. What we find, though, is when I call the state's attorney and say, I'm going to use me, hey, we got Dan in here. He's just in here on a trespass or a petty theft, and Dan really needs some help. He's not suicidal, so we cannot involuntarily commit him. What can we do about it? Well, probably more than half the time, the response I'm going to get, which I agree with, is, well, what you don't understand is that Dan has done this eight times. times in the last year, and the minute you let him out, he's going to be doing stealing something or doing something. And then we do have the other extreme. It is mental health, but they just beat the heck out of their mother with a baseball bat or something. And I don't really know which comes first, the chicken or the egg, in terms of the criminality or the mental health or some combination. And I just don't want to leave anybody with the impression, and maybe some counties they do is lock people up in the jail, but we really do, I guess, inventory. I mean, we look at who have and who we can get out. And if you want to comment on that, and if you disagree with me.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I mean, I've sent emails to the state's attorney's office, and they're very quick and receptive because they also don't want to keep people here. Julia is emailing me pretty frequently about my thoughts and opinions of inmates. And then, again, if we are to release him, do they have the resources? Most of our inmates come in with a lack of assets. They don't have housing. They don't have money. They don't have the means to continue treatment. And then so programming, what Nancy was speaking to earlier, is so important to us, even just maintaining them, because, again, they don't have assets. So building that connection to the community, morally reengaging them, giving them pro-social models, as opposed to maybe the pro-criminal individuals that they're hanging out with, it's so important.
If I may, my name is Alan Jones. I'm the jail superintendent of Captain at the Sheriff's Office. And I want to make sure that you understand the work that the mental health staff does. They are not there doing full-time therapy. They're triaging. They're doing immediate things on the fly. The corrections officers just went through training from these two ladies here recently, just 4 hours, just a couple weeks ago alone, to handle the issues from the time span that they're not there all the time. So it's not a therapy event that takes place here, a treatment.
Yeah, if I can just say, in the past month, I've had one inmate we've had to work with the police department for a homicide risk, one inmate that was self-harming, another inmate that was smearing feces, one inmate that refused to eat. In 1 month, we can have about 30, give or take, inmates on a suicide watch and over 30 on some other type of psychiatric watch. So it's every day having to monitor very serious and sick individuals.
Okay. Do we have any other questions on mental health operations? Anybody have any questions? Sheriff's Office, want to chime in anymore? We want to make sure everybody has a good grasp of what you guys are doing over there so they can better think about where we should go as a county. So if there's anything you want to add, feel free to throw it out, Mr. Sullivan.
Question. So you operate in both places, at the satellite and downtown?
Yes, and usually we have to be in two places at once, but we do our best.
Any other questions?
Is this accurate? I wrote this down. I think this is what you said, that goal is to make sure people who are there don't get worse. Mm-hmm. So you're not really interested in moving them along.
We are absolutely.
You don't have the resources to really move along. You just don't want people to spiral out of control.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we certainly get them feeling better, but it's just really making them function as best as they can.
Do you want to address the ones that are awaiting placement at DHS?
Yes. So if they've been found unfit, they'll have to go to a hospital, and it's about a 3-month wait from the time that they're found unfit, not to include the time that it takes to work with the lawyers and the forensic psychiatrist to get the evaluation to find them unfit. And then they'll have to stay in our care for over the months that they're waiting a bed. We've had a very sick and psychotic woman who cannot care for herself in any way, has been there for maybe 3-4 months, is awaiting a bed and is still awaiting a bed, is on second on the list and has been for quite a few weeks, and there's nothing that we can do. She refuses meds, so they're just monitoring her. So it can be a long process, and then they will go to DHS, go to hospital, get on medications, get the therapy that they need to become fit, to go back to their trial or their case, and then they're back with us waiting. Hopefully they continue their meds. Some of them will come back, the meds that made them fit, and then stop taking them, and then it's just a vicious cycle.
Sure.
Do you have any ideas about how you think that vicious cycle might be changed or improved? What I mean, if you know, let's say you had, you won the lottery 10 times and had money to restructure the way this was going on. What sort of things would you suggest?
Starts with the families, and then also in the community, providing services that they can get into quickly, getting a handle. Substance abuse, providing those services, because that is the underlying factor for many individuals. But, I mean, I could go on forever, my thoughts on that. But certainly having the resources in the community to continue, or that would have diverted them also, could help.
Sure.
What a lot of people may not realize, we cannot, a jail in Illinois cannot force them to take their medication. The doctor can prescribe it, and we do our best to talk them into it. But if they come back from DHS, for example, and they don't want to take it, we can't make them, and then they all of a sudden, the chemical imbalance starts, and they become unfit. And the same thing is through, and Sue can talk about it, medical stuff for their own health and well-being. We cannot force them to check their blood sugar. We cannot force them to take their any kind of meds, which really makes it difficult because the population we deal with oftentimes wants to have a medical crisis because, A, it gets them out of jail, and, B, sometimes it'll get us to talk to the state's attorney about, hey, let's get them out of the jail, the system entirely. There's no good answer. And the only other thing I'll say, I don't know how many we have sitting there waiting for DHS, but we've had as many as 5 and 6 people at a time. And we literally burn up all of our holding cells because often those people can't be with anybody else because they're the ones that throw the food and smear the feces and they're a threat.
Okay. Anything else on mental health for any task force members? So we don't want to ignore you too much. You want to tell us a little bit about the medical operations that you guys do?
Well, it would be my pleasure. I'm Sue, and I'm the administrative nurse of the Champaign County Jail, and I consider it an honor to be able to talk to you today. I am always excited about an opportunity to advocate for my patients. I've sat here and tried to think of how to begin, so I think the best place to begin would be to talk to you folks about the types of illnesses and issues that we see at the jail. We have a variety, and they vary in severity, but I would like to say that the acuity of the conditions that my patients have has skyrocketed in the time that I have worked at the jail, which is 7 years. We have patients that are HIV positive, and that presents a challenge on many levels. These patients deal with opportunistic infections. They deal with many different conditions that are related to their immune systems being depleted. We have many and many heart attack patients that have multiple stents put in their heart. We've had several gunshot wounds in the past year. We have several patients that are pregnant. We have a lot of patients that suffer from diabetes. We have patients that have suffered from strokes. Presently, we have 2 amputees in the jail. We have patients that have had seizures and do have seizures. We have patients that are on oxygen, and that is a special case. When I first was employed at the jail, it was a rare occasion that we had a patient that came in that was on oxygen. We now have had to purchase 2 oxygen concentrators, which is a machine that converts the oxygen from the air, takes it from the air and gives it. This is necessary for patients that are on oxygen 24 hours a day, whereas the tanks are depleted very fast. These concentrators provide a steady oxygen flow all the time. We've had many occasions that both of those concentrators are in use. So we have several patients with COPD and a lot of other lung problems. One in particular in the last year had a terminal autoimmune disease that affected his lungs. We have drug addicts. We have alcoholics. They present special health issues. We have patients with cancer. We've had terminal patients with cancer. We have patients that have urinary catheters, tracheostomies, colostomy bags. We have patients that are on dialysis and will go to dialysis up to three times a week. Actually, we had a patient that went four times a week, which means he had a very severe case. We have patients with staph infections, STDs, gout, fractures, hemorrhoids, shingles. We have a variety. And like I said, they vary in severity. These patients come in our door on a regular basis. So Captain Jones was mentioning the training that we had. We spent 4 hours with each of the corrections officers in the last couple weeks, training them to be able to handle these patients when the nursing staff is not available. I am employed full-time. I have an LPN that is employed full-time with me. We have up to three part-time LPNs that are employed also. As far as statistics go of what we deal with, we normally have between one and six HIV patients at all times. Like I said, they present a special challenge because of the different infections and so forth, and the housing for them is a particular issue. Not that they are segregated, but sometimes we have to be able to place them by themselves, you know, to keep them from contracting diseases and conditions. They also are a special problem in that their medication that they need to have to survive is extremely, extremely expensive. And if an HIV patient is on their meds, that extends their life for many, many, many years. So we absolutely want them on their meds. We want them to continue their medication therapy. We have up to three dialysis patients every year, three to four a year, at least two colostomy patients that come in and out. We've had one tracheostomy patient in that he had a trach. Several amputees, and the gunshot wounds this past year have been astronomical. And they have ranged from minor conditions, we have one in the jail right now, up to one that actually had his heart taken out and massaged him back to life before he came to us. We have a patient that lost a kidney and came to us with a Jackson-Pratt drain, meaning that it was draining the fluid off of the kidney, or where the kidney was removed. So these are all scenarios that when the sheriff mentioned that we need hospital rooms, these are the cases where those patients need special care, special attention, special treatment. We have lots of patients that need wound care. The patients that have bed sores, that is a particular problem. Their dressing changes are sometimes very complex. And a day in the life. Let me give you a day in the life of what I might do. The nursing staff is responsible for passing meds at both jails twice a day. We are at the jail 12 hours a day, except for the weekends, which we cover 10 hours. We are responsible for the sick calls, and that is the request slips that the patients put in when they have a medical condition ranging from a headache to nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. I mean, any health problem that presents itself to them, they put in sick requests, and we assess those patients the day that they come in. We also go to booking, and we see generally between 12 to 18 patients a day in booking, and that means they come in, they go over the medical questions with the officers, we receive those medical booking sheets, and we go through those and assess what their problems are, and then we actually take our vital cart and we go and do a full assessment on each and every one of them that present with a problem. We do health assessments every week. If a patient has been with us 10 to 14 days, we do a history and a physical on them, and also a TB test on all of them if they're able to take it. Generally speaking, in April, we saw 274 patients for full assessments in booking. We did 131 health assessments. The sick calls in April were around 152. We passed meds to approximately, in April, 182 patients. We had 294 prescriptions. A lot of what my job is case management. Today, for instance, I spent some time on the phone contacting two doctor's offices and setting up appointments for patients that need to be seen outside referrals, things that we can't take care of that need the expertise of an outside referral. We generally have at least one hospital admission a month, which means somebody is severe enough that we've sent to the ER and they are actually put inpatient, sometimes for very long periods of time. Some of those patients will require extensive clinical follow-ups after they're out. Some of them require surgery. We've had at least several of those this year. We take patients for blood draws to Carle Lab. We provide x-rays. We actually have a mobile diagnostic service that comes to the jail and does all our x-rays. And in this past month, we've had four fractures that we've needed to send out for orthopedic follow-ups. Basically, that's a day in the life of, or a month in the life of.
Anybody have any questions on medical operations? Anybody else? Have any? Mr. Bennett.
When you have to refer cases out, stuff you can't do, do you generally have doctors that are the contractor of the county that come to the jail then to see the inmates, or how does that work?
We have a doctor that comes once a week, and we screen the patients for the ones that need to see the doctor, and always those clinical outpatient referrals come from our doctor. He will refer them out. In other words, for an orthopedic specialist, an eye specialist, any of the specialists, he gives the permission. He says there's a need here, and we send the patient out from there.
Once per month? Once per week?
Once per week, yes.
Do you have an estimate of how many people had to be referred out, say, in last year, that the contract doctor couldn't deal with and had to be seen by a specialist or inpatient?
I took the stats from April, so that's pretty much what we see a month. It was 8 ER trips in April, 1 hospital admission, 6 clinical referrals, 8 blood draws, and 4 x-rays. That's a general rule of thumb, and if you times that times 12, that would be a pretty approximate. It varies a little month to month. This past month, we actually only had 4 ER trips, and there's some months we'll have 12 and 13. So it kind of varies, but that's a general average. You bet.
Sure. And just while you're thinking about it, this is not like I'm sick, so I take myself to the doctor. This means we actually have to find an officer, take them to the ER, stay with them. If they're admitted to the hospital, we almost always then have to, well, we always have to have 24-hour officers, but it's usually at overtime because there's just not enough staff to do it. Just in terms of expenses, not that you guys can do anything about it, but to give you some perspective, an average monthly cost for us for HIV medicine for one inmate is about
$3,000. Yes.
Well, for all the taxpayers. So, I mean, this is a huge component.
A big part of my job also, as well as the officers and all of my staff, is to determine, and the sheriff lighted on this, to determine who's bored, who would like a field trip to the hospital, who thinks for some reason I might have the power to persuade that they're too sick to be in jail, which I don't have that power. I do have the ability to talk with my captain and my sheriff about who I am extremely worried about and if we're going to be able to provide the care that they need. But I ride a fine line with a lot of patients who is trying to pull the wool over my eyes and who is in fact critically ill, and we do have a lot of critically ill patients. We had a gentleman this past month that was going into shock, and that was right before training, so that was a training tool that I talked about. We got him to the hospital, and they were able to help him with his condition, and he came back to us after a hospital admission. But, I mean, we have very, very severely ill patients. Some of them with multiple of what the issues that I talked about. A gentleman with four stents. He's had two myocardial infarctions. He's had two heart attacks. He'd had two strokes. He was impaired with his speech, impaired with his gait, you know, and was on coagulation therapy, which is also another issue we deal with. Somebody that takes Coumadin. Too much Coumadin, their blood is too thin. Too little Coumadin, they're throwing clots. So, it's hard to manage in incarceration, but there's the need to be able to do that. I'm very aware that the same patient I'm talking about was a multiple DUI patient. He is very, very harmful for him to be out because he doesn't seem to be able to understand that he can't drive. So I see both ends of it, but it presents a challenge.
I have one. It's not really a question to be answered now, in my opinion. In fact, I'm going to go like this. Sheriff, we just mentioned, obviously at this point we're in a fact-finding stage, but we did mention at the meeting last week, Scott had observed and I had concurred as well, that something we've not seen in this county is pretrial services, which can be used very effectively with the many mentally ill, and so it helps with many of that population, and I guess... So it's kind of a question, food for thought, and maybe input down the road. Is obviously, in my mind, what I'm thinking, if we have this and some other, whether you call them alternative, community-based programs that might decrease your population, but then you'd be able to increase medical services, mental health services, to have the system work better. So it's not on the spot. To me, it's such a fundamental question. I do know, you know, if you take out five inmates, that's not enough to affect operations. It's really a general request to start thinking along, you know, because we'll be percolating and hopefully communicating with you and other people in the system so that our recommendations pull together in a nice way and of benefit to the county. So again, it's an open-ended question, food for thought.
Well, we sure hope so. Any other questions?
I just have a comment to both of you. That just speaking as a resident of this community, I really appreciate and value your motivations and your service to the citizens of this county. It looks like really hard work, and I just want to say how much I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you. It's also very gratifying. It's extremely gratifying.
Great. Any other questions for Sue? Sheriff, do you guys have anything else on the medical side that you want to make sure people know?
Let me, if I could, add that in regards to the medical condition, to somebody coming in who's prescribed a sleep apnea machine, we kind of reference this. Sue's heard me say this in frustration many times, that she turns my booking area into a medical ward. We do not have cells or housing that have electricity inside the cell. So, and there's no cell electricity or outlets in the large pods or blocks. So if somebody simply has to have a breathing machine, the concentrator, or the nighttime sleeping mechanism, they have to come to the booking area and take up one of those cells so that they can sleep with their prescription. When that happens, now we've got competing interests, because I have mental health who's telling me I need to provide an individual cell for somebody to protect themselves, and I also have this person who can fully function in the daytime somewhere else. So you have limited physical plant space to deal with some of these issues that we have that they're forced to deal with, and the two of the best in what they do over there. So I appreciate you pointing that out. I tell them all the time, but I think they get tired of me saying it to them.
It's kind of funny that you mentioned that. We actually just had a patient come in before I came over here that has a pain stimulator, one that's implanted into his back, and one that he has to monitor that with to keep it charged and so forth. Because of the nature of the apparatuses that he has to be housed alone. That he can't be with another patient, in that he could use that as a weapon. and to take it away from him would cause him irretractable pain, and that's not something that we want to see with our patients. So we have different circumstances presenting all the time, and it did make me also think also the sheriff also lit on the topic. Just to keep food for thought when you're dealing with medical patients. We do have patients that use their conditions or will refuse to check their blood sugar or will refuse to take their medication to punish us in their mind for their incarceration. And that presents with a whole gamut of problems. So because we cannot force it, and of course that doesn't punish us, and I do lots of educating and lots of talking, but yeah, so that's kind of another facet of what the medical staff and the mental health staff deal with.
Great. Any other questions for Sue? Sue and Harmony, I think you've been very helpful for us tonight. One last chance. Any questions for Sue and Harmony?
While Sue's still here, I will say this. Just like I did about mental health, Sue and I talk every second or third day, and she's talking every day to the captain and lieutenant. We do try to get people out with medical problems, and we can't. Today the issue is an individual who is has a shattered shoulder with bone fragments and other parts of your body where you don't want bone fragments. Terrible medical condition, going to cost us a fortune. Can't let them out because the individual, he or she, continues to operate a motor vehicle. This is different than the one she told you about. Mm-hmm. Continues to operate a motor vehicle, not only with no license, but when they're absolutely plastered and then never shows for court and keeps doing it over and over. And it's just a never-ending cycle. And the last thing I'll say about it, and Alan touched on it, we have to be selective. You might say, well, that's stupid to have a jail without outlets. You don't know who's sitting in there. I mean, you give more than half our inmates, if they had an outlet they had access to, they would stick something in it in the deliberate attempt to mess up the operations. Literally, the jail you looked at was some of those doors. We've had maintenance come in there and spend almost an eight-hour day picking the pieces of the cards, the playing cards that we let them play with, or the styrofoam cups out of the locks because they have all day and nothing better to do than to try to mess around and punish us. So it's a real management nightmare. Not that you can solve it, but just to give you an idea what we deal with, it's not like you're dealing with your kids or even Uncle Fred, who's a little weird. I mean, these people, some of them are really weird.
And idle minds will do different things. I don't know if the lieutenant mentioned it, but a couple folks in the cells downtown were actually picking at old dry putty that were around the caulking around the windows. And it's not so much that they were trying to hurt themselves or anything else, they just had a lot of time, and that looked like something to occupy time, I think.
Well, Sheriff, Lieutenant, while we have you guys here, could you talk briefly on some of the statistics on your operations? We talked about your average daily census versus your capacity, your on-paper capacity and your real capacity when we were there, but just to make sure everybody's clear on that while we do have you guys.
Okay. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. I know most of you guys correct me if I say something that's very far off. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you.
Back in 2003-2004, our number swelled. We had another 30 beds welded in. We can actually sleep about 307-308 prisoners if you have the right mix of men and women and people who can be around each other. We don't have that. In general, most experts will tell you if a jail is 80% full, it is way too full because you can't segregate like you have to. Right now we're running about, this morning it was 205 prisoners bedded down. There were 21 in the bookend area. That would include our new arrest, and I think that also included some of our medical and mental health. We had 7 on electronic home detention. Every year, it used to be we booked in almost 900 to 1,000 a month, but now we're down where we're probably averaging about 9,000 a year bookends. The number of ladies that we have varies, probably a low of 10 to a high of 25 or so. Most of them, as you know, are kept in the downtown facility because otherwise then we just lose the space in the pods. There's 65 correctional officers. We make a trip to the Department of Corrections, male Department of Corrections, once a week. We generally make a trip generally once a week with the ladies to Dwight. We do our best to keep moving prisoners. We do our best to keep on the judges to keep moving cases. I'm not sure, Chair, what other statistics you'd like.
That covers it for me. Does anybody else have any questions on, while we have them, operations, facilities, any questions you want to throw out to educate yourself on this?
Of the numbers of folks that are in, just let's say at present, what proportion of them are pre-trial?
I'm trying to pull up the last report I can get here on my fancy little iPhone. If I remember correctly, we were, say we had 200, roughly 205, I think we ended up with, we had about 40 that were sentenced on their most recent list. So our, you know, whatever that is.
40 that were sentenced?
40 sentenced, the rest would be pretrial.
So the 160 or so are,
yes,
pretrial.
Yeah.
Ms. Branham.
Can we follow up on that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to recognize Ms. Branham first, though.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
My question was about the electronic detention. Is that a pretrial population, or are they sentenced?
They're sentenced.
Okay. All right.
Bill, you had a question?
Of the pretrial, you say there's 160 or so post-trial? And
no, sir. There's 40 sentenced, roughly.
40 sentenced.
Okay. Not exact numbers, but my best recollection is about 40 sentenced out of the 200, 205, dependent upon the time frame per day. Were you able to get it?
No. Okay. And of those 40, how many will remain for their sentence at the jail, and how many will be transferred to IDOC?
Well, of those 40 that are sentenced, they're sentenced to our facility.
I see. Okay.
So, I wasn't considering those that have been sentenced to the Department of Corrections.
The DOC, typically there'll be a heavy day in court. It may be, let's just say it's a Tuesday, and we might get 10 prisoners on Tuesday sentenced to DOC. We will normally get them out. I don't want to say the exact day we transport, but we will normally get them out within two or three business days. We will take them to DOC. We do not keep prisoner sentenced to DOC unless they have other pending cases or they're a witness in a case that's coming up where we cannot transport them, or we just have to go get them again real quick.
Mr. Kilgore.
A few other questions on the profile. How many, or you maybe you don't have this data, but I'll see what you can come up with. First, how many people do you...
Could you please speak into your microphone?
Sorry. How many people do you typically have who are non-DUI traffic offenses?
I don't have those split out for you in that manner. It is... to break them down by crime category is something that's possible, but we don't break those down in that manner on a daily basis.
But is there not a way that we could get some profile of that at some point?
It's entirely possible.
Not right this minute, but
yeah, no, it's entirely possible. It's probable in the potential this RFP that's just come back in and those studies and all that. But okay. It's possible.
And do you have any figures on the average length of stay for people in the jail?
Yeah, we do, but I don't remember what they are.
It was in the packet of information that was in the sheriff's initial report that he filed.
Okay.
And it is, I think we figured it up when we were talking about another program option. We were dealing about 40 to 45 days.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say 45.
Roughly. The average length of stay, on average, is about 40, 45 days.
And just a final question, is there any particular reason why electronic home monitoring isn't used in pretrial?
No. It has been used very rarely where we had people with medical problems and things. It has been used on very rare occasions. I believe, and you'd have to ask the judiciary this, when we got into our overcrowding, there was a scenario where the PD, public defender, would periodically go through and look at people, for example, with low bonds and people that, to get people out that way with recognizance bonds instead. But no. The other thing, and we will be happy, I mean, you guys want us to print you a snapshot of the jail, we will do that. You would be surprised, though, how long it's going to take you to go through and make sense of it, because people are in there for multiple reasons, which always just, it's not a simple press a button and get an answer. There's 25 in on DUI because there's always complications.
What if I could jump in, the reason we're having these mandatory minimums, the reason in general on the pretrial that the court system does not have more electronic home detention is the state statutes, state court cases, and so in general the county's restricted in a lot of ways on getting people out that they might want to get out.
Are there specific state restrictions on the use of home monitoring for pretrial?
Oh yeah, that's correct, right?
About blanket restriction? I mean, is that
not blanket? I don't think. But
the court, I think, has the authority to order that as a condition of bond if they otherwise find the bond is bond or being in the community is appropriate. And perhaps the other lawyer here might want to elaborate more.
And those are questions that you also might want to hold for hopefully when we have court services in the judiciary. Scott, did you want to enlighten us on that?
I was going to say one thing they can do with both electronic. Home detention, and then their variances actually get very very specific with GPS, and certain GPS is required in certain cases, like if you're violating order protections or things like that, where they have to know where you're at all times if you are out. Generally, I don't know. I think it's something that, and I'm newer to Champaign County, I can only speak for McLean County, where I've done most of my work as prosecutor, but I think generally the thought is if they can be released, they don't need to monitor. If you can let them out, then you can give them a recognizance bond and just let them out. But there's very few people that fall in that area that are safe enough to be out, but we want to be monitoring them. And by the way, there's daily expense to that, which gets very expensive. But depending on which county, sometimes the counties pay it, but most of the time the individuals pay it. And if they can't pay a $100 bond, they certainly can't pay $50 a day or whatever it be for the EHD. So there's a lot of different things in different counties do.
Anybody have any other questions? Okay. Well, thanks, guys. Did you want to add anything, Sheriff?
No, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you for coming in, guys.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Can I just follow up? Do I understand that if a person wants to, a person might be able to opt for electronic home operating, electronic home monitoring, but they would have to pay for that?
That is correct.
But if they go to the county jail, they don't have to pay if they're on the...
To just be in the jail?
I've had clients that I've represented here, so I can talk about that part. If you, for example, you're in for a traffic offense, a DUI, and the sentence is 30 days, that's not a minimum. Then what the judge can do is say they're supposed to be evaluated in jail for electronic home monitoring or home detention. And what happens then is when they go to the jail, they look through the different things, and if they qualify for it, but there is a daily expense that comes along with that, which they're expected to pay for being part of that. So that's the process that usually goes about it. But And I will tell you, that's one thing that I know in the State Attorney's Office here, just recently, that's been something that's been encouraged, so we want to make sure that's being suggested. But usually it's the defense attorneys that are supposed to ask for it. Prosecutors don't usually ask for it. It should be the defense, whether it be private or public defender, and then the judge makes the determination.
What percentage of people decline that option because they can't afford to pay, would you guess?
I would have no idea on that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. That's something we'd have to put to court services and to the judiciary. but it is, as they were saying, I'm not sure if it's $50 a day, if that was accurate, but there is definitely, there's a charge, and if you have no money, it's hard to pay that charge.
That's probably the top of the scale. There's a sliding scale based on income, and so I don't know what it would be at the bottom, but it is a cost, and when we're talking about people who maybe can't post a $100 bond, I think we forget even $10, $15 a day may be out of their reach.
Okay.
I just want to point out to the other members of the panel, you may have noticed this or not, but we have a report from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Institute of Corrections, and I'm not sure what the date of it is, but there's an appendix there that has a number of those statistics on what the jail population looks like at any particular day.
Right. But it's about a year old.
So we might want to, I mean, for example, they said that the average number of days in custody when they looked was 54 days. So, but there are other statistics by offense and so on that we may want to, at some point, look at to try to understand this.
And that's from last month's packets, Mr. Kilgore.
I think if we could get a snapshot of the jail more recently that mirrored the categories that the NIC had in its report, that would be ideal. And I mean, they were able to break down people according to, you know, non-DUI traffic offenses and other things.
Yeah. Okay, are we ready to move on to other current community programs? Of course, that will not be guided, but okay. So we have sheets on each of these programs listed, and so unless somebody has a better idea, we probably is best for everybody if we just go over these sheets one by one, and if there's discussion, if anybody has something they want to say. You can throw questions out. They may or may not be able to be answered. Chair?
Yeah. As we walked out, my staff said that maybe there was one thing that Scott alluded to and I mentioned, but we'll be happy at any point you guys want. We can print out who's in the jail, and you can look at the charges. But the one thing that's not in there that is very important, it's not the history. It's not the number of, I mean, we may be able to give you what's pending, but you won't have any ideas to the history, and that is a huge factor, as Scott said, and my staff said, Sheriff, you didn't make that real clear if somebody doesn't know how this works. So, again, be happy to give you the snapshot, but it really doesn't give you the full picture at all about why they're there.
Thank you. I'm sorry I forgot to say that or didn't say it right.
Okay, so we have some reports on current community programs, so everyone can keep building a better idea of what the county actually is doing while we're looking at what maybe the county should be doing. And so our first report is the Regional Planning Commission No Limits Program. And everybody has a chance to look at themselves. But did anybody have any questions or comments on this particular program? Mr. Driscoll.
I think I don't know that it's spelled out here, but this program is not specific to the jail population.
Okay. Anybody else have anything they wanted to add on the No Limits program? Or any questions that we should forward on to somebody? Okay. And then we have the Drug Court Fund. The Drug Court Program, which was referenced earlier by Chair Weibel. It's having a graduation coming up. And does anybody have anything they wanted to add or questions to pass on Drug Court? Okay. We have a report on the Prairie Center Health Systems Drug Court. Any questions or comments on that?
Bill? What's the overlap between the county drug court and the Prairie Center Drug Court, and why do we have two that sound on the surface to be so similar?
Mark?
The Drug Court Fund is actually a fund that it's a small pool of dollars that are from donations, as well as, I believe, there's a
This is for the county?
They go into the drug court fund. That fund, its use is restricted, and there's a copy of the memorandum of intent in participants in the program, that if they are, for example, they're living out in the community, don't have their GED, they can help pay for the GED classes or to take the GED. If they're interested in going to, say, cosmetology school, or some other training program, to make them more employable or it's restricted in its use. It's actually intended as an incentive fund to encourage participants to develop skills and resources in the community that are available in the community so that they're more apt to succeed through their participation in the overall drug court program.
Are you speaking about the county drug court program or the Prairie Center or both?
The drug court fund is a subset, is a resource that's available to the drug court program. The drug court program is overseen by Judge Ford
and the Champaign County Court System, but services
delivered, treatment and so forth, is what's
described in the program summary, the mental health board program summary.
That is the actual program. The drug court fund is actually kind of a small pool of dollars that's available to assist participants with meeting individual needs through, the mental health board program summary sheet is a description of services that the mental health board funds, but are available, that are essentially the treatment program for the Champaign County Drug Court. The drug court fund, the description that occurred that precedes that, is just a $40,000 pool of resources that have accrued over a number of years, and it's used to pay for the graduation party that's coming up. It's used to pay for a fee related to a PED class, that kind of thing. But the overall treatment services that are available to a client through the drug court program is what's available. That drug court team includes the judge, the probation officer, public defender, staff from Prairie Center, staff from Community Development. And then there are weekly meetings, I think they're typically Monday, where Judge Ford holds court and every participant is to come through. And there will be a report, a discussion held by the drug court team about the status of this individual participants. How they're performing. So the point is that there is not a Prairie Center drug court program and a Champaign County drug court program. It is all part of the Champaign County drug court.
In terms of questions to be funneled, is this working? I just can't tell. All right. I
have this, I found today very illuminating talking to the sheriff and his staff and also obviously seeing the downtown jail. And my feeling is that in two areas in particular, rather than just funneling some written questions, I would like to get more specific feedback relating to how offenders with substance abuse problems are being handled and those with mental health problems. For example, with drug court, a question I'd be asking, and is it Judge Ford? These specialized courts are now being expanded. We obviously have mental health courts, there's veteran courts, but there's something broader, and it's called a problem-solving court. So just a lot of different, as we percolate and these ideas, I think it would be helpful. I realize we have time constraints, so it may be that these will be something, I don't know how we would do that, some additional visits or something like that actually to the court. But as we put this all together, I think that that will be, because I don't know the statistics locally, but certainly nationally, 50% or higher of inmates were drunk or high at the time of their crime. And then the statistics on mental health or people with mental health problems end up being incarcerated. And even if they weren't incarcerated, I guess what we're looking at also is when these people first come into the system, is there something more that we can do so we don't get to the end stage? So my general recommendation, and I'm tendering it to you and the group, is for us to figure out, for you to figure out a way for us to get that kind of information so we can start putting the pieces together. Thank you.
Absolutely. And pass those on, and we will try to get it to the appropriate people and try to get answers for everybody. Any other questions or comments on drug court? Okay. We have a report on the Prairie Center Health System's mental health court. Any questions or comments on that? Then we have some community elements programs. Hopefully we can get some answers on those if anybody has any questions. We have community elements adult recovery. Are there any questions or answers? If anybody would like to talk about that? James, did you have any questions or wanted to make a comment on that?
Well, I mean, maybe just the community elements kind of in general, what sort of capacity they may have to expand those programs if those were possible. I mean, I think that's, if that's a possibility, I mean, I think that's part of our ambit is to look at those kinds of issues. So I'm wondering if we could hear from them at some point on that question.
I think we can. Sheila?
I can speak to capacity and current numbers. As of the end of FY11, we had 4,800 clients. Almost 2,000 that see our physicians, our three psychiatrists. Crisis services with a whole sort of array. But I do want to mention, I know this is sort of maybe what's happening in the jail system that everybody should probably be aware of. For example, as of the end of last week, our case manager doctor wait list is 90 right now, which is down 40 from 2 months ago when we were well over 100. And the only reason we're down is because we picked up 4 more hours from a current psychiatrist that we're working with. And we will be able to do that only to the end of June, in which the state has seen fit to cut our budget again. And so we're waiting to hear the details about that. But even more concerning is that a number of the people that we're serving are on Medicaid and use Medicaid to purchase their medication. And if you read recently the breakdown of what's happening with Medicaid, their authorization is 4. And average number of medications for the people that we're serving is 6. So as you can see, we're going to have a huge bump in the road here that's going to be
medications being a choice. In the case of the Medicaid program, it is physical health medications and psychiatric, so the total number. So we are also seeing the same things that the jail is seeing. We run residential programs, and in any night, we have approximately 185 people in residential settings. That ranges from our respite crisis center, 7 beds, all the way.
Operate the time center, and we also operate the roundhouse, and so we see in the community what the needs are, and so we're really focusing on that and
see what we can do. There are some new initiatives that are partnering physical health and mental health and substance abuse, and we have a few new programs with the help of 708, but I just wanted to mention at a higher level. For example, waiting 120 days. We are actually moving people prior to the jail. If you need that higher level of care, our crisis team is training in the good contracts. We work with all the police departments and also with staff. And then we work with the emergency departments, and we try to come in a crisis, so when someone appears to have a serious mental health condition, we try to refer and link them with local providers and
us and others. And so we are waiting and calling.
Higher level of care required us to come to 16 hospitals throughout the state for placement.
So you can see kind of you're getting sort of a
whole lot of things.
I do want to say that, you know, some of the programs that we have in
particular that focus on individuals that are justice involved,
those are evolving. Some of them are new, like mental health court. This is our second year we're approaching.
And so we can see
everybody has to be on the same page, and we have certainly seen some people that we haven't seen that we've had.
The state attorney's office or prosecutors to make that happen. So I think
there's some room for improvement. And then the second piece of it is, you know, if we're going to move people out, we do really need to look. It is possible, but if it's already overburdened, moving somebody out and not having a psychiatrist or
to speak about possible new programs that have shown great promise.
Oral recognition therapy, which we're looking at with the sheriff, and
it really is aimed at
recidivism and also improving
people's situations and problem solving.
It's the best practice model identified by SAMHSA, and we feel like it's a very promising model. I've been talking about it with
and also, of course, with the sheriff and.
Can you say the name of that again, please?
Moral recognition therapy.
Moral recognition therapy. doing it. Did you have anything to do with it? It seems like a psychologist must have named that.
Moral reckoning.
Moral reckoning.
Moral reckoning, yes.
Yeah, I can provide a link to probably one of the best little summaries that there is, but it actually has its own website and information. And again, it's relatively new in our thinking, but it is definitely something that we think has great promise and is delivered actually in a jail system. Males and females, but to entire corrections. My opinion. As far as some of the other programs that we've identified, there are some that are just in place in terms of helping people move from the jail if they don't have any benefits or resources. Maybe just to help kind of tie up, we also added some additional resources, including Jesus is the Way, they have a residential program, Salvation, in-house for people who have HIV/AIDS and have that need for medications and the monitoring that best meets their needs. All of these residential programs could be really beneficial for that high-end. Really identify people that have those kinds of needs. I think that these groups in particular aid with that. So that front end piece and maybe the pre-sentencing.
A whole bunch of stuff, but if you have particular
questions about our programs at Community Elements, I know Bonita can speak to it.
Great, James. Question.
I mean, for me, I mean this resonates with what Harmony was saying and what some of what Lynn is saying as well in terms of, I mean, we're here, we're supposed to be, you know, looking at alternatives to incarceration, and on the one hand, the people who are working in the mental health field within the jail are identifying the fact that if there were much better preventative services, that a lot of the people that are in there wouldn't end up there in the first place, and here we're seeing that Community Elements, which is providing some of these services, is at the same time, you know, losing funding and having problems with restructuring of Medicaid and so forth. And at the same time, what's on the agenda, you know, what prompted the formation of this task force is a proposal to spend $20 million on a jail or somewhere thereabouts. So it seems to me that as a task force, I mean, part of our problem is to look at this system as a whole and put together alternatives that constitute a genuine doing of something different other than constructing new jail cells to solve this problem. And so, I mean, I think we're beginning to hear some of the pieces of what those alternatives might look like. Now, ideally, we should be able to put together a set of alternatives which somehow equals in scale the proposal for that prompted this in the first place. Now that may not be possible, but it seems to me we need to be looking at a big picture, a big set of alternatives. I think, you know, Lynn has identified the issues of mental health and substance abuse. Scott has talked about pretrial services. Lynn also. I mean, I think we need to try to envision these things on a bigger scale and constitute those as our alternatives, and those would inform what we may bring back to the board, rather than small kind of tweaking of various programs. So I'm just trying to put some of this into a context what we've heard tonight and kind of where we're going with all this.
Any other questions or comments on the Community Elements programs? Well, Mark.
I just would like to point out that the drug court and mental health court services that are described here are funded by the mental health court and in part. There are other resources that apply, but they are the service, the spectrum of services that are available to Champaign County Drug Court and Public Welfare District. And the county court is not the not necessarily purchasing any of these services directly. They provide support for the participation information or state's attorney or the judge's time for the purchase of services for treatment or mental health service actually occurs through the health board or resources grants or also, related to the drug court fund, there is on page 19 in Exhibit A that actually describes what the drug court fund can be used for.
Okay. Yeah. We'll move on to the state's attorney's adult diversion program then. Does anybody have any questions or comments on that? And I will say, maybe Scott, you're going to bring up my point, but there's a new diversion program, which sounds very exciting to me, that maybe Scott, you could tell us about too.
I'm glad to. First of all, just to mention this, because I don't know where else to mention it, I think I've talked to just about everybody here except maybe Mark. When we were here the first time, I was working with the McLean County State Attorney's Office, and in the last month there was an opening here, and rather than keep commuting to Bloomington, I now work with the Champaign County State Attorney's Office. So I have a little bit of understanding of what programs we have, just starting in the last week or so. But, of course, the typical diversion program looks at small-time offenses. And figures out, anything from writing essays to community service, things like that, where you keep a criminal record off, a criminal conviction off your record. There's a new program called the Second Chance Court, which is just starting the next couple weeks, where State Attorney's Office and the court system is it trying to address the issue of the worry that we're trying to give felony convictions to everyone. And this is what's interesting is I've heard this complaint from a political standpoint from the left and from the far right. Because of course, felony convictions keep away any chance of owning a firearm, but it also keeps away so many chances to work in a professional capacity. You can't have a lot of professional licenses if you have felony conviction. Much to say nothing of actually getting really any job where that will be on your record as a felon the rest of your life. So what it's looking at is people who are charged with a felony but have no other criminal record, who did not commit violent offenses, and much like the diversion program, if you will agree to do certain things, whether it be community service or pay restitution up front if it was something where you property damage or you maybe damaged something, things like that, and do it within a certain time period, then you will plead to a misdemeanor and not a felony conviction, which obviously is much less harmful to you long term. Now, what is interesting with this program, this is something that I mentioned right now early on, was this is something that sometimes is available to people who can afford private attorneys for a long time. You have an attorney that will sit down with the prosecutor and will say, here's all the things that, and this is just I'm not speaking to the state's results, but my own experience, put together what's called a mitigation package. You sit down and say, here's all the good things that you don't know yet about this person. He's going to pay restitution up front. He's going to do all these things. Oftentimes, in whether it be in Champaign or other counties, the prosecutor sees all this new information and says, well, maybe it is appropriate to get a misdemeanor offense. But what this seems to be doing, whether it means to do it or not, is take this opportunity that's been available for people who can afford private counsel and making it consistent across everyone who's charged with a felony offense. So rather than it being the defense attorney coming and putting this together, it's the prosecutor who says, these are my criteria, you've got no priors, it's your first felony, it's not a violent offense, and then they look at that and say, well, here's what I think would be appropriate, and work with the victim and work it out so that possibly the person could avoid a felony conviction. So it's very exciting. It's just in the very early stage. The first court date isn't even until the end of June, but I think it's a really interesting idea. It's not something you hear about in many counties, so it's taking an old idea of diversion and expanding it to a level that isn't seen at all.
Nita?
I have a question about that. I want to know how that program affects a kid, because I'm just getting educated on this, that at, if a kid at 15 goes to DOC and made that one mistake and was not found guilty about it, just because they spent 10 minutes at DOC, they're fingerprinted. Then they complete, say, three guys, they complete college, and then they go out looking for professional positions. Will this program also benefit them, which they were not found guilty, but because now they're fingerprinted, so then their self-esteem is lowered. So then we're talking about maybe if they cannot find a job that they have spent 4 years looking for, then they end up jobless and commit a crime. Will this program work for them?
Well, let me see it this way. Not the second chance for
second
chance. This is kind of a, I shouldn't say pilot. I mean, it goes across all adult felonies, but it's still, we're still trying to work out, you know, the specific details on what the parameters would be with the public defender's office and the bench bar, and the court system, of course, what they're willing to accept. What you're talking about, it sounds like someone who maybe wasn't convicted. First of all, it's juvenile, so that's a little, it's always a little bit different. But if you're someone not convicted and they have, you know, they have a record of being arrested, that's something that they would have to hire an attorney and go through an expungement process as long as they weren't convicted. But no, to answer your question directly, no. Not for this, but it's not to say that, you know, the more diversion programs we have, I mean, I think at some point you might see something that affects juvenile cases. I don't know if anything's being planned for that now, but if generally, this is the first time we've seen it moving up. You know, it's a little crime. You, in Champaign and Urbana in particular, you have a lot of the small offenses that are already being charged as ordinance violations and not criminal offenses. So you already keep a little bit off the record. And then diversion offers a chance to these small-time misdemeanors, college kids or young people making stupid decisions, getting into a fight, things like that, keeping that off the record. So this is the first time, though, that you're seeing something try to uniformly address people who are charged with a felony for many of the same kids.
Sheila.
Thank you. I was wondering, how does this or will this interface with mental health or drug court in any way?
I don't know if it's been, if that's really been discussed yet. I mean, in terms of how it will overlap with those kind of specialty courts. I think it's generally, my understanding is it would be generally for people who don't qualify for those programs, but I'm not sure about that yet.
I was trying to think maybe when you said that they would have to agree to a certain...
I think generally you're looking at community service, restitution, being paid early on, or at least a commitment to being paid quickly, counseling, if there's anger management, if there's some kind of special special counseling they can address.
Right.
Yeah. So trying to, and the idea of it so far is that each prosecutor would tailor the specific requirements to the case, because maybe one person gets in a fight because they have anger problems, whereas one person gets in a fight, you know, it for totally different reasons. And so it wouldn't always be appropriate to give the same sentence to all those people, but the idea is we want this general framework, and you can kind of a la carte pick from these certain requirements and put it in what we think is appropriate for that person. So I'll be glad to update as we go along here. I mean, it is just early on, but I think it is a really exciting idea.
Okay. Do we have any other discussion? Anybody want to say anything else, bring up anything on these current community programs that we have reports for? Jillian?
I guess I'm just feeling, every once in a while, I'm feeling a need for some sense of summary in my own head. And so it's a little bit like what James was saying. It seems to me that maybe it's a little bit implicit, but maybe explicit, that I'm sort of taking a progress report here on how our thinking is going. Because I'm arriving at the understanding that maybe is shared by everyone, that What we have to deal with here is to think about these the problems we're addressing as a system, and that in that system there are the usual boundaries we think of between mental health, criminal justice, medicine, and so on, are arbitrary and maybe should be disregarded in some ways. That is, that those... I mean, I know, for example, that I've known for quite a few years, the literature shows us that, and I know this mostly about minors, but kids who run into trouble with the law are not substantially different from kids who run into mental health issues. And it turns out that the only thing that distinguishes kids who get into jails from kids who get into mental health care is which professionals they happen to run into. And a lot of times that's a function of social class and race and so on, and what resources are available. So I just think that principle tends to hold. The people that we're talking about, it's mistaken to think about them as being only criminals or only people in need of mental health services. What I'm getting to is, if we start thinking about this systemically, I think what we have to make clear to our community is that if we really wish to deal with the problems of the jail, of which I think there are, just from walking through it today, I mean, it's, you'd have to be blind to think it's a great place. But to really deal with the problems, and the problems that these officers and these nurses and have, is in order to alleviate those difficulties, we're going to have to build stronger pretrial services. We're going to have to build stronger community services. We're going to have to expand. It's absurd for us to think that community elements can replace all the things that we used to expect a state mental health system to provide. And I've been in this community long enough to remember when we used to have a mental health zone center here that would deal with adolescents with serious mental illness. And it's all gone. And so what we're down to the point where the responsibility for this is largely county-wide. And it's a tremendous... I recognize that it's a burden, but we need to make clear what the possibilities are. We're going to have to build coalitions with... There are many competent people in this community who can help to develop these kinds of services, but I think we're going to have to think about it as beyond what we can do in the jail. That's sort of... And my sense is that in some form or other, we're all beginning to grasp as a group that this is a community systemic problem rather than one that we should simply break down into the traditional narrow compartments. So I know that's just it's more. I hope that's not only a philosophical statement. I mean, I think it has to have practical consequences. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The other, would it be all right for me to add again, just as we start thinking about frameworks and things like that, our recommendations, I still feel there is much we will conclude can be done at the local level. But there are going to be some problems we see that involve the state, for example. And our recommendations, there's nothing that forecloses us from profiling those, and we can reach out. And again, I know that sounds ambitious, but I still recommend we look at what we can do here and not say, oh, well, we just have these problems and it's the state's fault. But also think that we might have a recommendation section that focuses on the state, and then maybe other counties will join us in some kinds of endeavors to get that done.
Okay. I feel like we've kind of segued into Section 8 discussion about the next steps. So, but if anybody wants to jump in there, throw it out. Scott?
One thing that I talked about before was, of course, pretrial services, which comes up again and again. And one of the things that I wondered if, and I'd put it to the group, if you'd be interested. Now, the person who runs the pretrial services in McLean County, I checked him. You know, Julian had asked me if I thought a presentation might be appropriate, and I think that it would. If you guys would want, I have checked with him. He thinks that he'd be available to come at the next meeting, and he just had to clear it with his supervisors as he's leaving the county. But I didn't know if that would be of interest to anyone. But he runs the pretrial services department in McLean County, and just to kind of review what that does, I've asked him for some forms. And generally, what they're trying to do is when someone has not yet been not yet had their trial, the question often is, does the judge have enough information to decide whether or not they want to, whether they want to allow someone out on their own recognizance or a low bond? And so what the pretrial services does, and this is just one, several counties do it in a lot of different ways. What Mr. Rizvi, and it's R-I-Z-V-I from McLean County, he's actually served and tried to help other counties set up theirs. Each county does it a little bit different. But just in McLean County, the staff will then meet with the person and put together a report in the jail, which might be maybe 8 pages here, and tries to, in a certain way, one, get a lot of information and actually verify the information that maybe the public defender's office wouldn't have time to do, and two, then quantify in some way the risk to that person is to either not show up for court, which is the two big reasons that we want to keep people in jail awaiting, you know, trial is to secure their appearance in court and to protect the community. And so they address those two issues, you know, whether or not that person has any long-standing ties to the community, whether or not they've been a danger in the past or at least in the recent past, and whether they've failed to appear in other courthouses or ours. And so they put this together, and then they basically reach a score, which the judge will consider, and oftentimes then helps them to lower their bond. Then if the person is released, then that same office acts like a probation department before they're sentenced. And they monitor, they might meet with the person, they might put them on electronic home monitoring, they might put them on GPS, they might make sure they go to AA. There's a lot of different things they can do. But they and if they don't do that, then they contact the judge and the judge can change the bond. You know, you're out because you said you'd do all these things, and if you don't do those things, then you know you have to go back into custody. So that's, anyway, a long version. It had been a month since we talked about it, and I won't know until probably later in the week, but if that's possible, I could let Mr. Richards know. If people would want to hear from Mr. Rizvi next in July, I could try to set that up.
Do people want to talk about that next month?
Absolutely.
Great. We'll try to do that then. How about we go Mr. Kilgore, then Ms. Ferguson?
Segue into my piece. Can I do that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I circulated a piece which talked about three counties that opted for alternatives to incarceration rather than build a jail. I mean, in some ways, their situation was similar to where we are at the moment. And I think I wrote that in particular to try to emphasize some of the points that Julian was making about the systemic nature of the problem and about trying to perhaps avoid kind of a knee-jerk response of defining the problem as a jail facility problem rather than as a social services community social welfare problem with various subsets. So if we look at what were the key measures that the people who were in charge of alternatives to incarceration in those counties went to in order to design an alternative and not have to build a jail, pretrial services was a big component. Looking at the administrative systems of the jail was also a big component in terms of booking, classification, and so forth, in order to get people in and out of the system more quickly. And then on a broader scale, there's the kinds of things Lynn was talking about, which are systemic questions which affect more in the medium and longer term the pressure for jail cells. That is state legislation. For example, we have this case
that seems to have really limited the use of electronic home monitoring, this Horseman case, as a sentencing tool. So there's the potential for lobbying to try to do something about that. There's the whole question of the racial profiling that takes place in the county jail here, which is where we find more than half of the jail population is African American, whereas only 12% of the general population is. Now that's clearly not something that can change overnight, but it requires some kind of a strategy in order to deal with. So there are those systemic questions which in the long term can reduce the pressure for jail cells and look at restructuring some of the ways in which the community operates and redefining the issue of public safety to not simply mean more jails and more police, but rather a more harmonious community with better social service provision.
Okay. Anybody have any comments on that? Want to add to the alternatives to jail construction? Okay. Well, next we had Sheila.
I had suggested, and maybe it would be best to have McLean County also to invite Champaign County us to say, but also to share what happens in Champaign County. It might be a great opportunity for them
I think that's great, and actually that's one of the things that the director over there had said when I invited him was, well, I heard that Champaign had in some form a pretrial services at one point, and it went defunct, and he asked if I knew why, and I don't know. I've been around long enough, so perhaps some of the stakeholders, if were invited, if they could say why it didn't work out in their case, and if they're willing to try it again under different circumstances.
Is there a judge in particular that is on the second chance program?
At this time, I think it's going to be Judge Klaus who will do that.
Judge Klaus in particular, just invitations to.
So if we could, perhaps I'll verify by the end of the week whether he can make the next meeting, and then I can make those invitations, unless you would like to, Mr. Chairman.
Do you have anything else, Sheila? Keep it rolling.
I made a note here that our last meeting we were anticipating the needs assessment RFP to go out, and wondered if anybody maybe going on with that.
Well, the 25th was the deadline on that, so maybe Ms. Busey, you can fill us in. So I assume we have the RFPs, but they have probably not really been looked at by the county.
There were eight responses. The nine evaluators from the jail project planning team are currently reviewing those responses, and there is an evaluation rating form. The consolidated results of those nine evaluators will be presented to the County Board Committee of the Whole meeting on June 12th, and the County Board Committee of the Whole will then determine the top-ranked firms to be asked to come to present, and those presentations will be done on June 26th.
Okay. Then Bill, you had something?
Yeah, thank you. Do you ever read the Sunday New York Times Magazine? They have a lovely occasional article written by a physician describing the presentation of some illness. And they go through various possibilities of what the presentation what's underlying this presentation, you know, the nervous system that's gone bad, or vision that's blurry, and the various possibilities that run through it. And I'm reminded of that. This is a larger example of that very same thing. This has been presented to us as a problem with the jail and the physical environment. And really what we're learning here is that we've got a larger problem that we really are, that we can play a very important role in addressing. And that is that we need to create a healthier community. We need to provide the infrastructure that supports the healthy development of our citizenry. And I think that's the kind of, and I think when you look at it that way, you can see that we've got things that we probably need to do to the jail, the physical characteristics of the jail, but there's a whole lot more that we need to do, and maybe the physical characteristics of the jail is pretty low on the list in terms of creating a healthy community. That's the larger comment I wanted to make with respect to James and Julian's larger notions and the other issues with respect to pretrial here today, too. I would like an answer to a fairly narrow and specific question, and I'll just ask it, and if it seems out of line, someone will tell me. At the university, we have a long and honorable tradition, maybe not so honorable tradition, of deciding that that building over there is something we want to demolish. And we take a long view on this. So in order to demolish this building, we set in place a maintenance procedure that ensures that in 15 or 20 or 25 years that building will need to be torn down. And so we spend almost nothing on the maintenance of that facility. And then 20 years later, my goodness, look at how awful that building is. We have to tear that building down. Any responsible administrator would do that. So here are my questions. I would like to know how much money has been spent on the maintenance of the downtown facility in gross dollars on an annual basis since 1996 when the satellite facility was opened. And I'd like the comparative number for the satellite facility, just in gross dollars. And then I'd like to break that down in two ways. I'd like to know how many dollars per square foot are spent on the satellite facility every year and on the downtown facility every year. And then I'd also like to know how many dollars per bed are spent annually at the satellite facility and at the downtown facility. Because I suspect, it was pretty bad going through there. And I spent a lot of time at the Danville Correctional Center. And the State of Illinois Penitentiary at Danville looks like a walk in the park compared to this place. And I'm just curious about how we've gotten to this point. And I just want to explore the maintenance dollars issue.
We can certainly look into that. Any other questions? Anybody else want to jump in on this? Julian?
I just have a question that has to do with those RFPs that are being rated and then presented and so on. Is there any reason that we should or should not look at those, this task force? Do we know what's going on there and have an opinion about it, or shouldn't we, or what do you think? I'm not sure what's procedural and what's just informational and so on. So,
anybody want to jump in?
I have a comment, but it's been a while since I looked at it, but it was my understanding that the consultant is going to meet with us, but also that the recommendation is coming from this other group. And as I mentioned from the get-go, it's kind of a not ideal structure, because we've got this group over here, and I would have done it with subcommittees. But in terms of I see the recommendations we make having an impact on the decisions, the recommendations they're going to be making. And the consultant is supposed to have expertise on the issues we're looking at as well.
Ms. Busey.
I would just point out that the decision about hiring the consultant will be made by the county board and not by either one of these groups.
I'm just sorry. My question is simply, do we have anything to say with respect to advising the county board with respect to making that decision? Or do we... do we remain silent about it, or we have nothing to say about it, or do we have... I'm wondering if we have any advice to offer. That's all.
Well, Ms. Busey, the RFPs are going to be made public at some point if they're not already, right?
The way the RFP process works, the consultant who is ultimately selected and hired, that information will be made public. But the RFP is a document that was issued by the Champaign County Board and the Champaign County Sheriff, and it did not at any point indicate that part of the evaluation process included a community justice task force. So at this point, it would not be consistent with what all the proposers who have provided responses to the RFP were told would be the process for the selection. The selection will be made by the Champaign County Board.
James.
But it does seem, although I know that's been the agreed-upon decision-making process, it does seem that there could be some procedure that was devised that would allow someone from the task force to at least have some input into the discussions when these deliberations take place. I mean, we are a body that has some standing in this process, and while I realize we don't have a final decision-making process, a final decision-making voice, it does seem, I mean, the jail planning team is going to be considering all these things and coming with recommendations for shortlists and so forth. It seems that there should be able to find some way to give this body a voice at some point when those issues are being discussed, even though we don't have a vote. I don't know if that's possible, but it certainly seems like it should be.
Well, I will say it's not a member of the commission, but Carol Ammons was added to the other task force. Any county board members will be able to review it. I haven't seen these RFPs, but I would say if you have things that you want to see in the RFP, well, see in the RFP and see in this consultant, contact the county board, do public participation, contact county board members you might know. Those are all things that you can certainly do to weigh in on the process. And as Ms. Busey said, ultimately the county board will pick any of those that it chooses to. Ms. Busey?
Well, just that there are procedural guidelines for how these things are done. If this task force is interested in providing input in the selection, I would suggest that maybe the preliminary phase, we're already pretty far into it, and it would be fairly late to engage this body in the preliminary phase. But that's not to say that you, Chair Richards, on behalf of this body, couldn't ask the county board if some representation of the Community Justice Task Force would be included in the evaluation of the presentations once the county board has narrowed down the group of proposers to three or four, whatever number they select of the eight original responses that we received. So, I mean, if this group wants to request to have a voice in this selection process, this group will be included in the work of the consultant. I mean, be reminded, all we're doing here is selecting the consultant. We're not, you know, dictating the consultant will be working with this group. That was made clear in the RFP. But if this group wants to have some input in the selection process, which, you know, belongs to the county board, I imagine you could bring that request to the county board on June 12th to see if, you know, some representation on June 26th when those presentations are evaluated could be included.
Is that something that this task force would be interested in?
Yes.
We have one yes. Is there anybody else with an opinion on that?
Yeah,
too?
Well, I'm just in light, clarifying what I was thinking when I raised this is just that I'm not suggesting that I will necessarily have anything to say about it. It just seemed to me that I'm imagining that if I'm on the county board and I'm trying to make this decision and I've constituted this body of people thinking about these issues, I'd want to know, it would be useful to just know what they think. They could discard what we think or not, but and maybe we won't have anything that we think. But somehow we ought to have, it seems to me just sensible in the process to just have our thinking, if there is any, available. That's all.
Yeah. So, it seems to me reasonable on the 12th to make a request that someone from the task force, or maybe two people from the task force, be allowed to participate in the meeting on the 26th in some capacity other than speaking from the podium in the public participation session. We obviously know we're not going to have a vote in this, but to have some kind of speaking rights, and I think rules can be suspended to accommodate that.
Well, you would have the opportunity, right, to represent the task force. Mm-hmm. You're on the county board, so.
Absolutely. So you'll change hats and wear the task force hat, a T-shirt?
We can definitely work out a way to make sure that the task force is represented on that, like Ms. Busey said. No, that's definitely one of the ways. Any other discussion on what our next step should be?
So are we allowed to see these RFPs? Or is that, I don't know what the procedure requires. Would it be inappropriate for us to see the RFPs?
The responses to the RFP are not public. So at this point, they're only being made available to county board members and the members of the jail project planning team, which was spelled out in the RFP that those would be the individuals reviewing it.
So that is the hitch. Ms. Branham.
No, I was just going to say, as far as the initial decision, you are a member of the county board. You will see it. You understand, obviously, comments, and we haven't voted on anything, and you can do that. And then above and beyond that, individuals who are members of the task force can come and make comments. And then as I hear it, and once they call it down to three, there can be some discussions about pulling us in more specifically as best one in terms of looking at this holistically. That's still a possibility, correct? Yeah. So.
Yeah, certainly as a county board member, I can represent you guys. I can look at any of this, absolutely. And I've heard what we've said tonight, so we can absolutely, that's absolutely not a problem. It's just that the responses are not available for the general public. Yeah, James.
Just one, but I believe the RFP responses are available to board members.
Correct.
Correct.
Yes.
So you would be able
so
to.
So even though I'm not on the jail planning team, board members will be voting on this. It's been set up so some of the work of sifting through this is being done by this planning team. But ultimately, the decision and any blame, any praise for the pick, rest with the county board. The county board will be deciding what it wants to do on that. Anything else, Scott?
Focusing on what we have now, I think most of us really enjoyed may not be the right word. We appreciated the opportunity to see the downtown jail and see what is available now. What I wondered is if anyone had an interest in going to the satellite jail to see what exists there and what possibilities exist for. We've heard for a long time that it was made to be expanded. It was made to be added on to later on. Just kind of see what that means in a practical sense. So
yes, but in order to prevent another crime from occurring, I suggest we do it in July.
Yes, I second that motion based on some scheduling issues we discussed earlier. So I wonder if maybe we could go ahead and try to set something up before around the July meeting, maybe even the night of the July meeting as we did tonight, before the satellite jail tour.
We can definitely see if the sheriff would be gracious enough to host us again. Anything else on next steps?
I just want, at the beginning, Bill handed out this evaluation form, so I don't know if we want to use this or how. I'm just curious where we've heard of, quite a lot of material tonight, and I'm just curious how we're going to cull all this together and how we plan to assess this. What's our mechanism, and do we want to identify any of these programs that we feel we want to know more about? Do we want to cast some of them aside? I'm just a little uneasy with not having a clear evaluation method here.
Clear evaluation on current programs?
Well, on what we've been presented, the idea is that we're looking at alternatives to incarceration. So we've heard presentations from a number of programs. Are all of these things that we want to further consider and look into more, or some of them do we think are interesting but probably not in the ambit of alternatives to incarceration? How do we assess these presentations, or do we simply just wait till we've had all of them and then decide?
Well, my thinking is, and everybody can have different thinking, but my thinking is we are doing these. We brought in the sheriff. We hope to get court services and some buy-in from the judiciary, and we hope to have the state's attorney come in to tell you what they're doing. So we have, so everybody knows what the county is doing for when you're trying to decide recommendations for what the county should do. Feel free to work, use this as a guide for what you think is working and not, and talk about that later. But also keep in mind that these are all independent agencies, even aside from the county board, and so the sheriff's programs operate independently from the county board, and it's going to be the same with the judiciary and the same with the state's attorney. And so use this to think about what's working if you want to suggest what's not, it's probably going to be more useful to think about what the county can do than, I don't know if the sheriff was expecting us to be grading his programs, but we can certainly use this as a guide when you're thinking about what seems to be working here at the county, what seems to not be working, when you think about what you want to tell the county to do. Your mandate here basically is as broad or narrow on any of this as you want to do. Is there any other question? Someone else want to chime in? Okay. We have a section on Open Meeting Act requirements. If everybody could do Open Meeting Act training on the link that we have here. This is a public body, and so we need everybody to understand the Illinois Open Meetings Act. Is there anything I need to add on that, Ms. Busey?
No, we mostly just wanted y'all to be aware, and I think you are now, but you really should not engage in a discussion via email, because if you're all included, you're actually having a discussion. So any one of you can send an email to the entire group to provide a point of information. Generally, at the county board, we limit that to the chairs so that the chair is aware of information that's being provided to the entire group, but never should you reply to all with your response, because that effectively, you have just initiated a discussion by doing that, which involves more than a majority of a quorum of the group, which under the Open Meetings Act you cannot do without noticing the meeting. It's convoluted, but the best thing to do is just don't ever reply to all on an email. And if you have something you want communicated to the group, and this is up to the chair, but generally it's best to let the chair provide that communication to the group with a reminder, we're providing this so you're all aware of it, but.
And
I'd be happy to, anything anybody wants the the task force to know about. Just like with James's item tonight, get it to me and we're happy to pass it on, either with the packet or email information that you want committee members to know. We're happy to send that out.
So are all members required to go ahead and take this? It's a training. I did it for library board. So you go through and you, at the end, I think you print out a certificate. Are we required to do that? And if so, who do we give the certificate to?
Do we need to print out a certificate? Yes.
Do we all need to complete it?
I guess we've decided this is a public body, so yep. You all are required to do it within 90 days of your appointment. And if you send the certificates to me, I'll keep all the certificates for this body so that we have it with all the rest of the records.
Is that the information, the same training that I had with the school board, or is it different material? Because I do have a printed certificate. For
then you can just send that. It is, there's only one training.
I just recently took it in October, so I can get you a copy of that.
Just one small point of clarity. My understanding is that a quorum for this body is 3. Is that correct? For this body is 3.
A quorum is 5. A majority of a quorum
is
3.
Okay, so 3. So that means we can't talk as in a threesome.
2 of you can talk to each other. You can talk to one other person.
Yes, that's good. The majority of the majority is 3.
Thank you for clarifying.
We can get around it.
Okay.
Private conversations are
permitted. I believe in transparency.
Okay. Do we have any other business? Think anybody have anything that we didn't hit in the discussion? Okay. We have scheduled for the next meeting date, Monday, July 2nd. We'll try to talk about pretrial services, and we will try to get scheduled a tour of the satellite jail. Anything that you want to be considered or put on, just shoot it over to Ms. Busey.
I guess Scott is going to find out if we're going to have someone from McLean County here for a presentation at 6. I mean, if you're going to do the tour of the satellite facility the same night, I think you found it. You didn't really have enough time tonight. Do you either want to start this meeting later, and or do you want to do the tour of the satellite facility on a different night, like maybe the following Monday, the 9th? I'm just throwing that out because procedurally, if you have someone who's here from McLean, they might not want to keep them waiting.
It doesn't have to be the same night. Would people prefer it to be a different night, or would people prefer to do it in one block? Any opinions?
Start at 4:30.
I think if we want to hear from, especially if we're able to get Judge Ford and possibly the state's attorney and some others to come to the presentation, that may be a good opportunity for them to speak. So maybe we should do the tour a separate night from the meeting, because it does make,
okay.
I mean, we're going on our fourth hour at this point from how long we've been here, so, or when the tour started. So that might be better, I think, for attention and to make sure we get all the information in. Any thoughts on that?
Could be on a Monday, that would be great.
Okay. Everybody's pretty clear on Mondays? We will try to find a Monday that we can get in there. It is not in June. Okay. There's no other business. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Sullivan, seconded by Bennett. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, we're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.